Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to go to space the next hour of our program, and our guest is the director of the Barlow Planetarium. We had the great pleasure of meeting him when we took our show to Appleton during the summer. Alan Pesch will be here, and we'll be looking at the Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite that smashed into the moon. We'll look at images from the Hubble telescope and what they have for their winter lineup. We love talking about space on our program. This is also our fall membership drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Joining me in the studio, Rhonda Fanning and Rob Schroeder. And we're here to ask for you to invest 3 minutes of time in your own future to ensure that all of the programs you value, including this one, are here on Wisconsin Public Radio when you want them. A contribution of any amount will do just that. Make your gift right now, please, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hello again, Rob and Rhonda.
Hello, Kathleen. Our goal is to get 75 pledges by 11 a.m. Meeting this goal ensures that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money we need to fund informative programs in the months to come. Please give online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Help us meet this ambitious goal.
In just a moment, we'll be talking to Alan Pesch. Like Kathleen said, he's the director of the Barlow Planetarium, which is the largest planetarium in the state of Wisconsin. I just learned that when we went up to Appleton for a remote.
We had a good time.
Yeah, it's kind of a hidden treasure up there. It was a great time.
We had popcorn without butter or salt.
Yes, a very healthy snack, unlike the brownie that you just had.
Rhonda.
I'm sorry.
I didn't finish it.
So discussions.
It's marvelous.
Discussions like these on the Ideas Network are possible because of your financial support. So please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And for a pledge of $100 this hour, you're going to receive a pair of Barlow Planetarium tickets. That's two tickets for $100. Good for the next year to any of the programs that they have at the Barlow Planetarium. So you can get onto their website, check out the shows they're having coming up. You can give them for a Christmas gift. It's a great hour to call and pledge.
Giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is easy. All it takes is a gift of a dollar or two for a week, a few minutes of your time. A dollar or two a week adds up to about $50 or $100 for the year, and all year long, you will benefit from this program and all of the WPR programs that you love. So please make your contribution online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
Think about all of the issues you've heard discussed on the Ideas Network in the past year. There are so many issues. We've done, I think, superb work discussing healthcare. We've looked at space issues when there are new galaxies discovered. And
we remember the landing on the moon, the anniversary.
Oh, the landing on the moon. That was a great show. I was even alive during those years. You kids weren't, but no. So I could provide historical perspective. We talk about space issues and just so many issues. Please make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And you can do it for all that you learned, which is an enormous amount, from Wisconsin Public Radio during the past year.
That's right. And if you pledge $120 this hour, you'll, of course, receive those two tickets to the planetarium, but you'll also receive the Wisconsin Public Radio member card. I use mine all the time. It's a great thing to have, easy to use. There's no paper to clip or coupons to tear. You simply keep the card in your wallet, present it for two-for-one deals at participating restaurants, B&Bs, golf courses, which is new this hour, and different various cultural attractions throughout the state. With every use, you'll be reminded of your relationship with WPR. So please pledge securely online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Again, we have a goal of 75 pledges for the hour, so please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we will be giving you a pair of Barlow tickets, good for any of the terrific shows at the planetarium, good for a year, for your pledge of $100. It's pretty conveniently located. It's in Appleton. It's not very far. It's a beautiful, beautiful facility. And there's, for younger people in your family, there's a laser show that takes place, too.
Yes.
I am from the older generation, but it's really
what
fun.
Are these things we call lasers.
Lasers. There's a laser show. So it's a neat thing, as Rhonda said, for a present too. Or you can take a trip to Appleton and go to the museum and go to the planetarium. We had a great time when we were there. That's for $100 pledge. We have a goal of $75. 75 pledges, and we haven't had won yet, so get us rolling here this hour.
That's right, and thank you to everyone who has or who might be on the phone currently pledging. But if you haven't, please get online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And we want to thank people for last hour. We should always do that. We did very well last hour. It was a good hour, and this hour will be a good hour as well. So thank you.
Our listeners have helped make this healthcare forum and coverage what it is. You know, if without the listeners and their suggestions and their calls, it wouldn't have been the series that it is turning out to be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess that's it for you.
Thank you
for now.
Alrighty,
thank you very much. We're going to go to space this hour. There was some controversy about this NASA Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite charging into the moon. What was it, about a week and a half ago? We'll be starting our news from space with that, and we will also be looking at the recent images from the Hubble telescope replacing the Hubble telescope. What's next? The winter lineup for the Barlow Planetarium, and all of the latest news from space this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join us online today and join the show. And Alan Pesch, director, is with us. He was with us for the remote that we did from Appleton. Hello again, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Kathleen. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. So nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Well, let's start with this, because I'm still not sure why we had to smash this thing into the moon to find out about water, the NASA Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite. Are we going to learn something significant from this? And who thought up this idea, Alan?
Well, this is a common chemistry experiment where we try to find what's somewhere by doing certain things to it. Sometimes we take samples, but of course landing on another planet, which the moon is, sort of, and trying to get samples can be very expensive. So this LCROSS mission, which was a very fast project that they thought up and launched very quickly and got to the moon, was supposed to crash into the moon. And when it did, and it did on Friday morning, it was supposed to shoot up material, and then we had another satellite following it that was going to analyze the material before it also, 4 minutes later, crashed into the surface of the moon. They're still analyzing the information.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the fireworks that everybody thought it was going to be. I was out on Friday morning. The weather wasn't perfect, but I was watching the south pole of the moon, hoping for something, even though it wasn't predicted. And even watching it on TV, there wasn't anything super visible about it. But we have to let the scientists do their job, because this was an experiment. We weren't planning for, we were hoping for fireworks, but you know what? Sometimes in science, that's the way it works out.
Yeah, right. Is it a good idea? Do you know what the unforeseen consequences may be of crashing something into the moon? Is that a good idea?
Well, you know what? The moon is more active than we thought during the Apollo era, but it's still, what we did is we took something about the size of a school bus and made it go very fast and crashed into the moon. We made a new crater on the moon that they're estimating is about 60 feet across.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't change a whole lot. We were looking at a very specific area. We know that there's not ice near the equator of the moon. That's where most of our Apollo projects, the landings were. They were on places where it was hot in the daytime when the sun was out and very cold at night. We were looking at the poles where there are places on the moon, some craters, that never see daylight. And what we were doing is looking in the bottom of those craters, and by crashing LCROSS into that crater, looking for any evidence that there could be subterranean ice, that we could actually use that water, because water is super valuable. You take that H2O, you can turn it into oxygen, and you can also turn it into hydrogen. Oxygen is great for us because we need it. Hydrogen is great for fuel, and it could be a great stepping stone to going further out in our solar system if we colonize the moon and find out that there's actually resources there to help our footsteps outward.
Hmm. So that was the reason behind all of it, to think that we might be colonizing the moon to branch outward.
Yes, and we have to see what resources are there. I mean, it's a lot different. I mean, just imagine if we go back a few centuries, if the early ocean explorers had to carry all the food on their ship for their entire year voyage, or as opposed to landing on an island and finding out, hey, there's edible stuff here, or we can get wood to fix our boats here. That helps their mission along, and we're doing those same steps out into space.
And we had this idea, Alan, I guess after Apollo, that the moon was very, very dry, right?
That all our, in fact, this mission wouldn't even been considered 4 decades ago, because everything that showed us when we brought the rocks back from the moon and from the astronauts' experiences, that water wouldn't exist in the environment they were at. Several hundred degrees in the daytime, hundreds of degrees below zero when the sun's down, it just wasn't a place for water. And now we start seeing that there are these signatures as we take our other lunar satellite that was, or our other lunar probe that was launched with LCROSS, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, is now taking unprecedented images of the moon that we can actually see our landing craft from the Apollo era.
Oh, my gosh.
So all those people who think that we never landed on the moon, or that it was done in a Hollywood soundstage or whatever, LCROSS is actually taking images of what's left of the lunar landing sites. In fact, on some of the sites, you can actually see the paths that the astronauts walked to do their mission. So it's kind of interesting looking at those pictures.
Whoever got the idea and started spreading it that people never walked on the moon?
I have no idea. I always believed it. I've met several of those guys who walked on the moon. It's just so much that they've done. And the people who say that have never really gone deep into of how we can prove it. In fact, one of the most, we've never seen our landing sites on the moon. We've never seen our hardware left there. Because, in fact, until just a month ago or a couple months ago, we didn't have the technology to see our landers, our areas on the moon. But a lot of the Apollo missions left a laser reflector on the moon, and an observatory would shoot a laser at that reflector and time how long it took for it to go out and come back, and we could measure the distance to the moon to the inch. And those reflectors are up there. Somebody had to put them there. You just can't shoot a laser at the moon and have it bounce back at you.
Right.
And that sort of stuff. These guys, it was a great time of us doing amazing things. In fact, I heard somebody say the other day that the lunar lander was probably the most best designed lunar space or spaceship we've ever made, because it was made to be in space. It was designed to land on another planet. It couldn't land on Earth because it wasn't strong enough, because it was designed to actually be on another place, not here. So it was a great time for us.
Mm-hmm. Alan, you talk about this latest, the LCROSS being a fast project. It seems to me as though it would take years and years to design such a project. How fast are you talking?
I think that if I remember correctly, I think from the idea to launch took about 26 months.
Really?
If you can design something that uses, granted, you can't go to a store and buy off-the-shelf science equipment for space missions, but if you have stuff already developed and your mission is clear of what you're looking for, and you know something else is going on at the same time, we were able to launch Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter and LCROSS on the same launch and do a lot of science. And when it comes right down to it, it's the science that's important. Even right now, as we're talking here, we have a ship heading to Pluto. And the argument on that, on the Pluto mission was, is do we want to do a lot of science or a little science? A lot of science would have meant a lot of equipment on board, which would have made the trip take a lot longer. We decided to do minimal science to get the basic questions asked, and now we can get there a little bit quicker because our space probe is a little bit lighter than it would be with all these extra science instruments on it. So it was a fast mission. They really planned quickly, and NASA's trying to do that. We can do a lot of science because things change. We haven't been to the outer planets. We haven't been to Uranus and Neptune since the 80s, and late 70s, early 80s. And now things change as we see this. And science, we have to document that change.
Right. So how long does it take to get to Pluto?
Oh, Pluto, I mean, you're talking, I'm going to do my calculation, about in the area of a decade.
Huh.
In fact, it was kind of funny because one of the groups decided that we launched the Pluto probe when Pluto was still a planet. So one joke was they were going to send out another probe to tell Pluto that it was demoted, but it was going to arrive after our current probe. So the first probe was supposed to not tell Pluto anything.
That's funny. Well, we're such people who want everything in the next couple seconds now with the internet and everything. To plan something that's going to take 10 years to get there is, you know, good for us to have long-range planning like that. We don't usually live that way.
And we don't. In fact, I had friends who've been in this business and actually working for NASA when the Voyagers were launched back in the fall of 1977. And Voyager 1 and 2 were only supposed to go to Jupiter and Saturn. And then Voyager 2 had an extended mission to actually also hit Uranus and Neptune while Voyager 1 went off to do its own stuff. And I had friends who were told by project or by their superiors not to mention the elongated mission of going to the next planets. And at one point, they had to. They're just like, can we mention it now? We're actually going to go by Uranus this year. We're going to go by Neptune in a few more years. And the great thing is, it took the people to plan that because they needed to launch at the end of September because of a great in September of 1977 to make sure the planets, those four planets, were lined up properly, that they could actually hit all four planets. If they would have waited another year, they probably wouldn't have been able to do what we now know as the Voyager Grand Tour.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Alan. We're talking about space this hour, particularly, well, we're starting with, which was a pretty big thing. Not as big as people wanted. They wanted more drama in terms of what we saw, but the NASA Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite, which I didn't know this, was put together in 26 months, the purpose to find out if there is water so the moon could be a station for people to colonize, really, before they go to other parts of this universe. And there are other issues to talk about as well. The Hubble, I keep forgetting. I want to go to these websites every day because they're so extraordinary, aren't they? But we'll look at the replacement for the Hubble this hour and whatever else you'd like to talk about. Alan knows what's going on a moment-to-moment basis. He's director of the Barlow Planetarium, which is one of the state's treasures that I don't think enough people know about. It's in Appleton, Wisconsin. We had the great pleasure of meeting Alan and seeing a great show there when we went to Appleton for one of our remote broadcasts in August. We've been busy the last few months. And he was gracious and then appeared on the show the next day. I want to remind you that we're in a pledge drive right now. As if you didn't know. And for those of you who can pledge $100, we're happy to send you a pair of tickets that you can use to the planetarium, you know, anytime during the course of this year. It's a great spot. And here's how you pledge. A $100 pledge, which is less than what our average pledge is, to make it accessible to you. 888-202-2552 for your pledges. 888-202-2552. We have a goal of 75 pledges this hour. I think it's a marvelous premium for you. So please call and say you'd like it. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Alan Pesch, director of the Barlow Planetarium, is our guest. For you to join our conversation, the number is 800-486-8655, and we have lines open for Alan. I just started with the NASA Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite that went into the moon last week. But we can also look at what we've learned from Hubble and the mission of space, and we'll talk a bit about where this administration places exploration in its list of priorities. The object that's going to the satellite going to Pluto, which will take 10 years to get there. So feel free to join us for our conversation about all things space. I want to go back to the lunar thing just for a moment. From what I've read about this, Ellen, that the point was to see, you know, whether there was ice. Is this your understanding, too, that the ice would have been left over from comet impacts billions of years ago that lingered in the shaded craters of the moon's poles? Is that the only way there might be ice on the moon? Is that what would have created it?
Well, that's one of the ideas when the solar system formed, almost 5 billion years ago, there was a lot of material. And what we see as our present-day solar system took the last 4 billion years to clean itself out. And it's one of the reasons you see the craters on the moon and craters on the planets that don't have many or much atmosphere, like Mercury and the moons of Jupiter and some of the moons of Saturn. That is all left over from the pieces that were being gathered up by the planets or the moons. And a lot of that stuff could have been left over from that early stage of our solar system, where there was probably a lot more comets around, and maybe just left over, maybe not collisions, but just left over. So there's a lot of places in our solar system that don't get the light of day very often, and we get to see back in time and actually get a snapshot of what the solar system was in the early period after it was formed.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to a caller, Jennifer from Madison. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. My question is a little off topic from the standpoint of this, the specific exploration and stuff, but I have an 8.5-year-old who's really interested in space, and I want to talk with him about, looking at the websites and going to planetariums. But if you're interested in being an astronaut or a researcher, it's like, what are some of the basic steps that one needs to take? It's like, the math and the science and those sorts of things. Do you have any thoughts on how you start talking to younger kids about if this is your goal or your dream, how you make it happen?
Oh, yeah, that's great, Jennifer. I mean, kids at that age, and I have a 6-year-old myself, and they are soaking up so much material so quickly at that time. In fact, this is a great opportunity not only to promote your child, but also to figure out how you guys can do it together, because a lot of people get afraid of astronomy because they don't know the constellations, they don't know how to do things. The best thing to do is take it in little steps and foster this lifelong learning of the sky, of science, the scientific method, of constellations, and going that route will spark this really this fire that will be very difficult to put out. A lot of people want to buy telescopes immediately. You know what? Sometimes just going out and looking at the sky will now let you go and buy some binoculars and look at the sky a little bit closer and get to learn the roadmap of the sky. And then when you get a telescope eventually, now, because of your experience with just looking at the sky and with binoculars, you know where to point the telescope to look at interesting objects. Sometimes it doesn't always work. Everybody wants to buy a big telescope and thinks that the telescope will point automatically to something cool. Well, most of the time, if you just point the telescope, you're not going to find that cool thing. I would find some books on space, let them know the facts, let them experience stuff. Look at Venus in the morning, look at Jupiter at night, watch the moon change. All those things will promote questions of why, what's going on, and will foster that lifelong learning.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. It is astounding to me, and I'm to blame as well, probably as a result of living in cities most of the time, that there are all these constellations, and we see them every night for years and years and years, and we don't know what they are, and they're in our sky.
And it comes from experience on how much does it mean to your life of where the sun comes up. Well, look at your house. That we owned a house once where the December sun, when it rose around the solstice, around Christmas time, hit our thermostat in our house.
Oh, my.
So it's winter time, and our thermostat turns on the air conditioning because it thinks it's 80 degrees.
Oh.
And we had to adjust the house. looking at the windows. And even now, when you get up in the morning, remember back in the summertime, you'd get up and the sun was up, and by 5 o'clock in the morning, you could be driving around without headlights on almost. And now it's dark almost till 7.
I know. I miss the summertime.
And all that is astronomy and finding your way around and watching the sky and having it help you, whether it's where you're going to plant your trees in your yard, which bedrooms need heavy curtains on them in the summertime.
Right.
My daughter's bedroom gets super bright at 6 a.m. in the morning in the summertime, and she's up. So, I mean, it's that, and yeah, as an argument, Sherlock Holmes, I believe, in one of the books, says that he wasn't quite sure the moon goes around the earth because it really didn't matter to him. And I think it matters. I think you can watch that stuff and it can help you find things in the sky and take it in steps, because you don't know your neighborhood immediately when you move in. You take little steps away from your house, and learning the constellations is very similar to that. Take it in steps, see how things relate to each other,
right,
and pretty soon you know the sky.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. That's good. Alan Pesch is our guest this hour, director of the Barlow Planetarium, where we had the pleasure of seeing some shows. They put on great shows. It's in Appleton, really centrally located in the state, and we're talking about the crashing of the NASA Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite and the wonders of space and fostering careers in exploration, all of that this hour. Welcoming your phone calls on air. The number is 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn here with Rhonda Fanning and Rob Schroeder. It's our WPR Fall Membership Drive, and you know that you can count on us to talk about these issues that matter to you, and we count on you to keep these discussions on the air. Please make a gift. If it's $100, we're going to send you tickets to the Barlow Planetarium, which will be a real treat for you. Alan's a real treat just to meet him. Give online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, Kathleen. Our goal.
Hi, Rhonda.
Hi. Our goal this hour is 75 pledges, and we have about 7 people who've called in so far, so we're going to need another 68 pledges in, say, the next 26 minutes or so. The success of this fund drive depends on you. Thanks to those 7 who have already pledged. If you haven't yet, go online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And when you give at that $100 level, make sure you ask for a pair of tickets to the Barlow Planetarium. For $100, you get 2 free tickets that'll be good all year round. You can give them away as a gift or use them yourself. Go to any show at the Barlow. So $100 this hour, 888-202-2552.
We try to be as timely as possible, Kathleen, when choosing topics and guests like this show with NASA's recent mission to the moon, like the show earlier today with the Senate Finance Committee voting on healthcare legislation. Maybe that's why this show has attracted so many loyal listeners, because you want to hear in-depth discussions that go beyond the daily headlines, and it's all made possible by listener contributions. To make your contribution, go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And you can support Wisconsin Public Radio for a song. That's right, for less money than you probably are spending to download songs from iTunes this year, you can make a big difference right here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Think about it. You probably spend $1 per song on iTunes, and you probably download an average of at least a song a week. I know I do, probably more. That's about $52 a year. That's about what a typical first-time contributor gives to WPR. So make your first-ever gift of $1 a week online at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552.
And a reminder, for $100, it's a nice outing for you. We'll send you a pair of tickets to the Barlow Planetarium, a real treasure here in the state in Appleton that we would like to have more people know about. And Alan is wonderful. He really knows his sky. So that's what we're asking you to pledge this hour, $100, and you'll get some tickets. WPR.org at 888-202-2552. Support the exciting mix of programs that you enjoy on this station with your contribution to WPR.org.
There are several ways to pay your pledge. One of them is EFT. That stands for Electronic Funds Transfer. You authorize us to withdraw monthly installments from your bank account. Once it's set up, you don't have to think about it again. It's a great way to be a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio. It saves paper and it's easy. We'll help you get started when you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have a goal of 75 pledges this hour, and we are at 7 pledges. So we're on our way, but we need more of you to help us reach our goal. And again, for a pledge of $100, you'll receive a pair of Barlow tickets, good for any one of the terrific shows at the Planetarium. And this is good for a whole year.
It's a long time. It only takes a few minutes to pledge. Online at WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552. Thanks, Kathleen.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Thanks very much, Rhonda and Rob, our producers of this program, and we thank them. Our on-air number for Ellen Pesch is 800-486-8655, director of the Barlow Planetarium in Appleton, Wisconsin, and we'll get our guests on the air in just one moment. Let's talk about Hubble for a minute, Ellen. Is there a huge project to replace Hubble entirely? What's going on with it?
Well, the next generation space telescope is going to be called the Webb Space Telescope, and this telescope is going to be looking at different wavelengths of light. What has made the Hubble such a huge PR machine for NASA in astronomy is the wonderful pictures
extraordinary. Gorgeous.
And those pictures are in the same that we could see if we could take a picture. What we're going to do with the next space telescope is to actually look outside of what we're used to seeing. What we see with our eyes, the very, very narrow sliver of the electromagnetic spectrum. We have other great observatories in the sky right now called the Chandra X-ray Observatory, which looks at X-rays. We have the Spitzer, which does the infrared. And we look at those other wavelengths because they each tell us a little bit about the science. The Webb Space Telescope is going to be looking at a completely different set of wavelengths and will show us new science. The sad part is we probably won't think of the pictures as being as pretty as the Hubble returns. So that's why it was so great that this summer they upgraded the systems on the space telescope to allow those pictures to continue for another 5 or 10 years before the Hubble systems actually end up failing. There will not be another servicing mission to the Hubble Space Telescope, and it has rewritten astronomy rules. There are things that it has discovered. Not only is the galaxy or the universe expanding, it's accelerating. It's proved the existence of black holes. It's found dark matter, which we think is causing the universe to accelerate. It has changed all the astronomy rules, and it took something that was up in space, about the size of a school bus, could barely fit in the cargo bay, to do this exceptional science that the telescopes on Earth are getting better at doing, but they're still limited by this very thin, eggshell-thin blanket of air that surrounds the Earth, that the Hubble lives 360 miles above the Earth's surface and doesn't have to worry about that stuff. Astronomers do not like twinkling stars. Twinkling stars means the images are bad. Where the Hubble is, the stars don't twinkle. They're solid. They're steady.
So they need a new poem. Right. Let's go to Jean from Menominee. Hi, Jean.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment on some telescopes. I had an astronomy class in college, and I had a great time. And my husband bought me a Meade telescope.
Okay.
From Sam's Club, and you couldn't ask for a better self-explanatory, easy-to-use telescope. It tells you how to, point it north, and it aligns itself with the North Pole. And then you can, pick out stuff. But I'm very jealous. They got a new one out, and you can hook it up to the computer, the star maps, and put in your zip code. And get and pull out and print star maps from your area.
Yeah, telescopes are beginning to do these leaps and bounds of technology, where there's times now where you can get a telescope, set it up, and without, except for you setting it up, the telescope will grab GPS coordinates, figure out where it is on Earth, and from the GPS also know what time it is, and then we'll be able to give you a list of things to look for. And those telescopes are very powerful. In fact, some of the telescopes we use here at Barlow, we have computers, handheld computers hooked up to them, and not only will the telescope point us to help us point to stuff that we want to see, if we point it to something we don't know, or a first-time user points it at something they don't know, the display will tell them what they're looking at. So the telescopes have come a long way. A part of me enjoys that technology. Another part of me is a little bit saddened by it, because I think it takes away an opportunity to really look and know the sky like we've done in the past. In fact, we were at a star party with somebody who had one of those telescopes, not quite as high-tech as the one you had, and because we knew the sky and the sky was partly cloudy, we knew what the star was poking through the clouds, whereas the high-tech telescope at the time needed to see three different stars, and he could never get three stars out at the same time. But we were able to overcome the... It was kind of like a big competition between the old-time astronomers and the new technology. But eventually, in the end, everybody got to see some very cool stuff.
Oh, do you go to a lot of star parties?
Not as many as I used to, but it's fun to go someplace and see a lot of different types
yes.
of telescopes being set up and used differently, and seeing it's a great way to share information on how people have come over certain problems, and it's a great sharing opportunity. And plus, you just seeing the large telescopes that some people have designed or better use, or it's great to participate in.
Oh, I imagine that would be fun. Thanks, Gene, very much for the call. Let's go to Roy from Appleton. Hi, Roy.
Hi, Kathleen, and hi, Al. I was with Al at 7:30 this morning, but Al, why don't you talk a little bit about our shows and the type of science that are in those shows, such as the Halloween show, the Christmas show, the Andromeda. That might refer back to that woman who called earlier about how to excite a child into interest in space and what kind of space and science we teach in those programs.
So you're with the planetarium, Roy?
Well, Alan will tell you who I am.
Okay. Okay.
Roy is the head of my advisory board.
Oh.
And a good friend. We really liked at the Barlow to share our interest in astronomy. We really want to promote our interest and hopefully get other people to get interested and to take that step or the next step into astronomy. Like currently right now, we have a family show called Moon Witch, and it's geared toward families and children who are a little bit younger. It gets them into the planetarium, and looking outside at the dome of the planetarium, you see this dome and you kind of wonder what's going on. A lot of people confuse it for an observatory, but we can recreate the starry sky inside and control it and move it to where we need it to move to show you astronomical concepts or just where to find Jupiter tonight if it's clear out. And we also like to do our feature shows, and currently our feature show is called Two Small Pieces of Glass, which talks about Galileo's adoption of the telescope and how he made it work better than what was considered a parlor toy back in the early 1600s, and the discoveries that he made because of that, and then what has happened because of these two small pieces of glass back in 1609 that he looked at Jupiter and the moon with. We now have an orbiting space telescope that is showing us our place in the universe and how it took those four centuries to get to that position. Another thing we like to do is we really want to stress a show that really lets you go outside and see things. And every month we do a program that we call Wisconsin Skies, and we do a special topic every month. So we talk about stuff in current events, whether it's what's going on with the space shuttle or that the Soyuz just came back with three people. There's six people up on the space station. What's going on in our solar system, LCROSS hit, what's going on in the universe. Did we learn something new? And then this month on Halloween night, we'll be doing a program called, and we're going to talk about the Andromeda Galaxy, our closest galaxy that you can see without the help of a telescope that is 2.2 million light years away.
Oh, my gosh.
And every month we change that topic. So you can come out, see the sky, but hopefully learn a little bit more and come look at our telescopes when we do our Wisconsin Sky, because then we can take you right outside and show you some of the stuff we were talking about.
Oh, great fun. Thank you. Unless you had something else, Roy. Roy's gone. Thank you, Roy, very much for the call. And we do want to remind you that we're in a pledge drive, so all of these wonders that Ellen has described, for a $100 pledge, you can do one of these great outings this time of year or any time during the next year. They rotate their programs and have different programs all the time. For your pledge of $100, we're happy to send you a pair of tickets to the Barlow Planetarium. It's a great outing, and not too far away from anywhere in the state. 888-202-2552 is our pledge number, 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Alan Pesch, director of the Barlow Planetarium in Appleton, is our guest. And we go next to Bob from Eau Claire. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Fine. Alan, I have a question that has been vexing me for quite a while. I do know quite a few of the stars and constellations, and I do watch the changes in the sky. One of the things that I've noted is the position of the moon between the summer sky and the winter sky. And if you stop to think about it, the Earth, as it goes around the sun, kind of tilts on its axis, so we are starting to, if you will, lean away from the sun on the northern hemisphere, and yet the moon seems to lean even further with us as we go along on that particular route. And in the summertime, when we are leaning down toward so that we're getting more of the sun, the moon goes further south. And I'm just curious, how does that track, our orbit around the sun, interplay with the orbit of the moon around the Earth?
Observation. And the moon leads to a lot of questions that people will think they have an idea of what's going on, and they're watching it, and then they realize that something isn't quite meshing. There is an imaginary line that the sun follows. We call it the ecliptic. And the sun is on that ecliptic, and the moon and planets follow the ecliptic. And what happens is when you look at a full moon in the summertime, it is actually in the position where the sun would be in the wintertime. So when the sun is high in our summer sky causing the summer season, you wait on a full moon night and you look at the full moon, and the full moon is really low. That full moon is about where the sun would be in the wintertime. So that's why it seems like we have the high sun in the summertime, but the full moon is low. And then in the wintertime, when the sun is low, the full moon is high. So it's all on the same tilt, but they're just on different positions on that path. And that's what causes that change in the height of the moon. Great question, Bob.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Bye-bye.
One more phone call. Tom is next. Hi, Tom. Hello, Tom.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, Tom, go ahead.
I would just like to simply ask, it amazes me how these people are able to predict certain things, but just simply when there's, you hear on the radio or television, there's going to be a meteor shower at a particular time and at a certain part of the sky. I'm just, how in the world are you able to know when that happens?
That's a great question.
Well, yeah, and thanks for that question. The meteor showers are actually caused by the Earth flying through the debris field left by a comet. And because that comet has a known orbit, we know where it's dropping its pieces off. And we know, for instance, in November, we'll go through the meteor shower known as the Leonids. And we know that every year when the Earth comes to this position in space, material starts streaking across our sky because the Earth is flying through that debris field. The other important thing to know is, and this really works for people who live up north who understand snow flurries, when you're driving in your car with your lights on at night and during a snowstorm, it appears like all the snow is coming from a point in front of you and going around you. That is the exact same thing that's happening with a meteor shower. And you have to be on the dark side or leading edge of the Earth to see that, because the only time you're on the front of the Earth is between midnight and noon. And that allows us to see that material streak across our sky. And the meteor showers, I mean, NASA once, during the Leonid meteor storm, stopped a space mission because they were afraid that the space shuttle could be in danger during its mission, so when they thought it was going to storm. But meteor showers are kind of cool. Look for one in November. The November one should be a very, very good opportunity to see some, and it's going to peak between midnight and 5 a.m. on November 17th.
Okay.
So all you have to do is look to the northeast, and hopefully you'll see something.
Great. Thank you, Alan, so much.
Thank you.
Alan Pesch, director of the Barlow Planetarium, an encore appearance from him. He was with us as we did our remote and had a wonderful time from Appleton. Joining me now in our studios, it's, as you know, our fall pledge drive is taking place right now, and Rhonda Fanning and Rob Schroeder will be with me momentarily.
At home, I have it on. Sometimes I have TV and radio on. Usually it's one or the other, but the radio is great because you can be doing things. You know, you can be working in the kitchen. Sometimes I'll have it on in a couple rooms if I'm in and out of, say, my bedroom and the kitchen. I have it on in the car almost exclusively. Wherever I have control of a radio being on, I would choose WPR. I'm Judy Hsu from Eau Claire, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for mesmerizing music.
And if you'd like to pledge, we hope you will, 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Rob Schroeder, Rhonda Fanning joining me again here in our studios. Hello to both of you.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. We have a goal this hour of 75 pledges, and we still need about 63. Excuse me. We have about 6 minutes left, so please give online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Help us pay for the programs you depend on and help us meet that goal of 75 pledges. We only have about 5 minutes left to go.
And remember, you decide the amount of your pledge, and when you give $100, ask for a pair of Barlow tickets good for any one of the terrific shows at the Planetarium that are good for 1 year. So please pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
People always talk about the high quality of life here in Wisconsin. It's what has kept some of us here for many, many years. We have great state parks. We have a wonderful university system, public libraries, and a great Lake Michigan, Superior in the northern part of the state, and all kinds of lakes all over this beautiful state. Wisconsin Public Radio is also a part of the high quality of life here in the state of Wisconsin.
And supporting Wisconsin Public Radio today is one of the best things you can do with 3 minutes of your time. Just give us your name, contact info, and how much you'd like to give and how you'd like to pay.
Whether you pledge online or give us a call, we keep your personal information safe. So your gift right now of $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount feels right to you, will become the stories and programs that keep you connected to the world, or in this hour's case, to the universe, I guess.
Yeah.
So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Just a reminder, and it's a nice outing for you at any time of year for a $100 pledge, which is reasonable for a pledge and reasonable for most of you who are listening and love Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to send you 2 tickets for an adventure to the Barlow Planetarium in Appleton. You can go to the show that you want to go. You can go online and find out all that they're offering you during the course of the year. It's a great place and really a fun outing. We had a good time when we were there. So a pledge of $100, 888-202-2552 is the number to call, or WPR.org is our website.
And again, our goal is 75 pledges for this hour, and we have just about 2 or 3 minutes left to go. Remember, the success of this fund drive, it depends on you. Thank you if you have already given. If not, please consider giving now online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. You decide the amount of your pledge. And again, when you give $100, you will receive a pair of Barlow tickets good for any one of the terrific shows at the Planetarium, good for 1 year. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Have you ever heard anything that you've or passed along something that you heard on Wisconsin Public Radio to a friend, a neighbor, a coworker? Perhaps you have one of those driveway moments where you get home and you don't want the conversation to end, so you continue to sit in your car. Even running in and turning on the radio, you're going to miss a couple of minutes of great programming. With program notes on the website and audio archives, you can pass things on. Maybe you already do. It's a great way to stay connected with others by passing on ideas, stories, information. WPR helps you stay connected with your friends and family, to the world, the universe. Your donation keeps this connection going. So please pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Only a few moments left to get those tickets for the Barlow Planetarium, which are good for a year.
And you'll have a good time there.
You guys had a good time when you went up for your remote, right?
We had a very good time there.
It was amazing. I learned things that I had never knew before. The Andromeda Galaxy, I did not know that I could see that with my naked eye. So now if people ask about my eyesight, I'm like, well, you know, I can see about 2.5 million light years away. How's yours? So good to know. Alan Pesch is quite the entertainer and quite just very knowledgeable and has such a wealth of knowledge.
He's great. Yeah. The number, once again, Robin, then we got to go.
The number is 888-202-2552 or online, WPR.org.
Thank you both. Thank you, Rhonda Fanning and Rob Schroeder, and thanks for your pledges, everyone.